This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines are resistance groups slam the talks between the Palestinian Authority and Israeli officials in Jordan. The Russian president once again hits out at the West for its weapons supply to Ukraine. And a migrant boat shipwreck in southern Italy leaves more than 30 people dead. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Jordan is hosting a meeting between Palestinian Authority and Israeli officials later on Sunday amid heightened tensions in the occupied territories. Jordanian officials say representatives from regional parties and the U.S. also attend the meeting in the Red Sea port of Aqaba. The Palestinian Authority says its delegation will use a meeting to call for a peace deal and an end to Israeli occupation of the West Bank. However, Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas, have called on the Palestinian Authority to withdraw from the meeting. They say this is a U.S. plot against Palestinian aspirations. Israel has intensified its crackdown against Palestinians over the past months. The violence has killed at least 62 people this year. Thousands of people have hit the streets of Tel Aviv for the eighth straight week to denounce judicial reforms proposed by the new far-right Israeli cabinet. The protesters gathered in front of the Knesset waving flags and placards that read, "Crime Minister." The demonstration came as the Israeli MPs are taking steps forward towards the approval of a controversial reform plan. The plan has triggered protests with people hitting the streets for weeks to express their anger at what they call a fascist cabinet. They believe the proposed overhaul would fatally undermine checks and balances. If approved, the law would limit the powers of the top court to overturn the cabinet's decision. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has developed a new cruise missile with a range of over 1,600 kilometers.
Our long-range cruise missile, with 1,650 kilometers of range, has been added to the Islamic Republic's missile arsenal. It's flying at an altitude of approximately 40 to 50 meters from the ground. It's a phenomenon that needs no further explanation, considering its 1,650 kilometer range.
General Hajizadeh said the missile is named after the city of Pave in the western Iranian province of Kermanshah to honor Iranian martyrs in the region. The commander of the IRGC Aerospace Force also said Iran now possesses hypersonic missiles, which no air defense system may ever be able to intercept.
This missile system is capable of striking any target we want, and naturally our first targets will be the missile defense systems. And with our other technologies such as cruise missiles and drones and other capabilities, they cannot compete with us in any way.
General Hajizadeh also said Iran is now able to hit American ships at a distance of 2,000 kilometers. Iran has made quick advancements in its missile program in recent years. The Islamic Republic, however, has repeatedly stressed that its missile program is purely defensive and meant for deterrence. Back to our top story of the day and a meeting that is to be held in Jordan and the Palestinian Authority taking part in that. We're joined by Mahmer Abu Saada, professor of political science from Al-Azhar University in Gaza City, and also Moti Abu Musaba, Palestinian and political activist from Gaza City also. Tell us more, Mr. Abu Saada, if you could please tell us more why resistance groups such as Hamas are against the Palestinian Authority taking part in this meeting.
Well, if we look at what has been happening over the past 2 months since the coming of this extreme right-wing Israeli government led by Netanyahu and his partners Itamar Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, this Israeli right-wing government has been expanding Israeli settlement in the Palestinian territories, killing the Palestinians, like the massacre that took place in last week, Wednesday morning last week, that killed more than 10 Palestinians. Some of them are elderly and also Palestinian children. And more than a month ago, also Israel held another massacre in the city of Jenin. Over the past 2 months, more than 62 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli armed forces, and Israel also has legalized 9 Israeli illegal settlement outposts in the West Bank. All of these Israeli atrocities and all of this Israeli aggression against the Palestinian that has been going on lately doesn't justify meeting with the Israeli government, meeting with the Israeli officials in the Jordanian city of Aqaba. That's why many Palestinian resistance groups like Hamas and the Islamic Jihad and other Palestinian factions like PFLP and DFLP, all of these Palestinian groups have called on the Palestinian Authority not to attend the meeting and not to participate in a meeting that has been sponsored by the U.S., to crack down on Palestinian resistance, to crack down on Palestinian aspirations, and to give more support for Israel, because Israel is trying to avoid any further escalation in the West Bank, which has been taking place lately as a result of Israeli aggression and Israeli encroachment on Palestinian human rights and Palestinian national and political rights.
So, Mr. Abu Musaba, in your opinion, is there even a way or hope to solve the problems and, of course, the crackdown that the Palestinians are facing right now with Israel through negotiation?
First of all, thanks for having me. In my opinion, in addition to what Dr. Mahmer has just mentioned, this meeting actually comes in the context of the ongoing and the relentless attempts of the Israeli occupation, backed with the American, with the U.S. administration and in cooperation with regional parties to contain the escalating resistance in the West Bank, is precisely and particularly in front of the intensified Israeli aggressions and the Israeli assaults and attacks practiced left, right, and center against the Palestinian people. This is not happening away or far away from those kind of attempts to contain that kind of resistance, and it's only directed towards liquidating the Palestinian rights, especially amid this kind or through this kind of hard situation and condition that the Palestinian people is passing through and experiencing. Amid the ongoing and amid the current Israeli far-right government that leaves no stone unturned without committing more and more crimes against the Palestinian people. As we have mentioned before, that the Palestinian people in front of those realities have their backs to the wall, so they have no choice but to resist the Israeli occupation and to intensify their resistance in front of the escalating Israeli aggressions and incursions attacking the Palestinian people. No one, despite all that kind of those meetings, no one can deny the Palestinian people their legitimate right to self-defense and to resist the Israeli occupation. And all those kind of attempts will go in vain in front of the willingness of the Palestinian people to deter the Israeli occupation and to resist the Israeli occupation. We can see, and the Israeli occupation, we can see that the Israeli occupation during the long history and the long record of the Israeli history, we can say clearly that the Israeli occupation, the only thing that the Israeli occupation is caring about is just to entrench the occupation and gain more and more time in order to deepen the occupation on the Palestinian lands, to shed more Palestinian blood and to construct more and more settlements on the Palestinian lands. So it's not about the Palestinian people. The court is, the ball is entirely on the Israeli court. The Palestinian people is standing in a position that of defending themselves in front of the escalating and the intensified Israeli incursions and attacks targeting the Palestinian, even the Palestinian existence on their land.
Thank you very much, Shamuti Abu Masaba, Palestinian and a political analyst who joined us live from Gaza City. We also had Professor Mahmer Abu Sada, Professor of Political Science from the Al-Azhar University. Iraq's defense minister has met with his Iranian counterpart in Tehran. The two sides have agreed to expand bilateral cooperation. Meanwhile, Iran has reiterated that it is ready to share its experiences to help Iraq boost its defense capabilities. Iran's defense minister salutes during an official ceremony to welcome his Iraqi counterpart. Thabit Mohammad Saeed al-Abbasi visited Tehran as Iran and Iraq are eyeing regional security and stability through stronger defense cooperation, with both sides emphasizing border security.
We fully support a united and stable Iraq. We will help Iraq achieve stability and security that will lead to the development of the country, and we are prepared to help Iraq in this regard. Based on our historical and geopolitical ties, we consider Iraq's security our own security.
The Iranian defense minister also emphasized that the Islamic Republic will not allow its borders to be threatened. He described the presence of extra-regional forces and the Zionist regime in particular as the main threats, not just to Iraq itself, but also to regional security. Meanwhile, the Iraqi defense minister voiced Baghdad's readiness in strengthening ties with Tehran.
The main objective of this visit is to boost bilateral relations between Iran and Iraq. On top of the agenda is the war that Iraq is fighting against terrorism. Both Iran and Iraq are facing national security challenges. Stronger defense relations can alleviate the situation, and in our meeting, we discussed this issue.
Tehran has had good and high-level relations with neighboring countries, particularly Iraq, in the past years, reiterating that international ties and the improvement of ties with neighbors are among the most important arenas of Iran's foreign policy. Iran has made great achievements with regards to its defense capabilities and has reached a level where it is now self-sufficient. The defense minister reiterated that the Islamic Republic is prepared to share its valuable experiences with the Iraqi side. Gizu Misha Ahmadi, Tehran. The Russian president says the West is an indirect accomplice to the crimes committed by Ukraine in its war with Russia. Vladimir Putin says NATO is indirectly involved in the conflict by sending tens of billions of dollars in weapons to Ukraine. He has also underlined that Moscow has no choice but to take into account the nuclear capabilities of NATO as the U.S.-led military alliance is seeking the defeat of the Russian Federation. Putin said he had no doubt that a multipolar world would happen. He made these comments in an interview with the Russian TV channel. And a migrant boat shipwreck in southern Italy has left at least 33 people dead. Several children are among the victims. Italy's National Firefighters Department said about 40 migrants survived the tragic incident. More than 100 people were aboard the ship. The vessel crashed against rocks during rough sea weather. Italy is one of the main landing points for migrants trying to enter Europe by sea. According to sources, more than 20,000 people have died or gone missing in the central Mediterranean since 2014. Our correspondent Max Civilli is live with us from the Italian capital, Rome. Max, tell us more about this very tragic incident, and are there any plans, government plans, basically, to control the situation?
Well, unfortunately, the death toll is getting more tragic by the minute. According to government sources, the number of people who died in the tragic event has risen from about 30 to about 40. And tragically, a baby and several children were among the dead. Also, the number of migrants aboard the ship seemed to be about 200 and not about 100, as initially reported by some Italian media. The Italian government issued an official statement about an hour ago in which Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni expressed a deepest sorrow for the tragic event, but she also remarked that those who have to be held accountable are, quote, the human traffickers who had put 200 human beings on a small 20-meter large boat in conditions of extreme weather. On the other side, humanitarian organizations are saying that Prime Minister Meloni should be held accountable for the deaths of tens of migrants following a provision she introduced in November last year. It's a compulsory code of conduct for NGO-run ships rescuing asylum seekers in the Mediterranean Sea that Meloni herself introduced in November last year. The new measures basically force all NGO-run ships to deliver rescued asylum seekers to port immediately without waiting to pick up transferring asylum seekers to larger vessels. The Court of Catania ruled the government's anti-migrant measure as unlawful, but also the Council of Europe has urged Italy to scrap that decree, describing it as a breach of international law because the councillors have the idea that the measure prevents search and rescue missions.
Thank you very much. Our correspondent, Max Civilli, joining us live from Rome. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women, as human beings, are completely equal in Islam. This is part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 4th, 2023. There are a few other things, but unfortunately I cannot go into detail about them. One is the issue of hijab. Hijab is obligatory in the religious laws. It is a religious law. It is a religious obligation. There is no doubt about the hijab being obligatory. Everyone must know this. Now, they may raise doubts about whether or not the hijab is necessary. But no, there is no doubt about it. It is a religious obligation that must be observed. However, those who do not fully observe the hijab should not be accused of being religious or against the revolution. No.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I've said this before. There was a time during one of my trips to other provinces where I mentioned this in a gathering with a number of religious scholars. Some scholars had gathered there. I said, "Why do you make accusations against certain individuals sometimes? This woman, for example, who has exposed some of her hair, is often referred to as having bad hijab. This should be called inadequate hijab instead. Her hijab is inadequate. Why do you accuse such people?" When I came into this city, a large crowd came to greet me. Perhaps at least one third of the crowd was made of such women. They were shedding tears. You cannot say they are against the revolution. How can you say they are against the revolution when they come forward with this kind of enthusiasm and eagerness, and they take part in certain religious or revolutionary ceremonies? They are our own children. They are our daughters. I've repeated this on numerous occasions during the Eid al-Fitr prayers, in the Eid al-Fitr sermon, or in the ceremonies that are held in the month of Ramadan on the Qadr nights. I've seen pictures of this. I could not go there, but I would be shown pictures. And there were women who were covered in different ways in these ceremonies and were shedding tears. I envy them for shedding tears like that. I tell myself that I wish I could shed tears like that girl or that young woman. How can you make accusations against such a person? Yes, not observing the hijab properly or having inadequate form of hijab is not the right thing to do, but this does not mean that we should exclude these individuals from religion.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Malcolm X was the iconic leader of African American Muslims and a civil rights activist who was assassinated 58 years ago. The iconic leader was born in 1925 and was jailed for robbery in 1946. In prison, he was introduced to the Nation of Islam and became influenced by the teachings of its leader. He was assassinated at the age of 39 on the 21st of February 1965 by three men. Now, after 58 years, his daughter says federal agencies concealed evidence of his murder and she intends to sue the FBI, the CIA, New York City Police, and others for his death. Eliza Shabazz accused various federal and New York government agencies of fraudulently concealing evidence. She claimed the evidence shows the agency conspired to assassinate Malcolm X. Shabazz says she seeks $100 million in damages.
For years, our family has fought for the truth to come to light concerning his murder, and we'd like our father to receive the justice that he deserves. The truth about the circumstances leading to the death of our father is important not only to his family, but to many followers, many admirers, many who look to him for guidance, for love. And it is our hope that litigation of this case will finally provide some unanswered questions. We want justice served for our father. Thank you.
The slaying of the black leader has been the subject of speculation about the potential involvement of secret government agencies in his assassination. Back then, the FBI infiltrated black rights movements in a bid to dismantle them. Malcolm X was a lead spokesman for the Nation of Islam. The group advocated separatism for black Americans. Malcolm X later split from the organization and toned down some of his radical views. In the 1950s, the United States reckoned with its prevalent racism, and Malcolm X's assassination was a turning point back then. The civil rights movement, which was a campaign to abolish racial segregation, discrimination, and disenfranchisement throughout the United States, culminated in the 1960s. Various individuals and groups, most notably Martin Luther King, struggled to rid the United States of its institutional racism. But despite years of struggle and some success, structural racism is still rampant in the U.S.
It has failed, and it's very tragic. There's been so much suffering, you know, even when there is progress in the 1960s during what's often referred to as the civil rights movement, the liberation movement, there were gains made, but at the same time that there were legislative remedies made, immediately we see the mass incarceration system beginning. And we see neoliberalism taking hold, which impoverished so many millions of people.
The median household income for black people is 37% less than that of white people. And black people are also less likely to benefit from home ownership, the engine of generational wealth in America. Black couples are also more than twice as likely as their white counterparts to be denied a mortgage or a home improvement loan. Furthermore, only about 5.7% of physicians in the U.S. identify as black or African American. This statistic does not reflect the communities they serve, as an estimated 12% of the U.S. population is black or African American. One reason for this disproportionate number is that black people have been historically excluded from medicine, and life expectancy has declined slightly for African Americans. A black child born today is likely to live up to 74.7 years, 4 years less than a white baby.
So with if there is not a commitment at the top, if there's not seriousness about acknowledging racism and its impact, then we end up with the situation where we're in now, where the U.S. continually claims to be this racism-free country, when in fact it is anything but.
In a State of the Nation address in Moscow, Russian President Vladimir Putin has defended Moscow's military operation in Ukraine. Putin accused the US-led NATO alliance of fanning the flames of the conflict in the mistaken belief that it could defeat Moscow in a global confrontation. He blamed the West for starting the conflict in Ukraine, saying Western countries led by the United States were seeking unlimited power in world affairs. The Russian president said Moscow was not fighting the people of Ukraine, stressing that Ukraine has become a hostage of the Kyiv regime and its Western masters, which have effectively occupied the country. He also accused the US-led NATO of using the conflict as a pretext to supply Kyiv with arms and munitions. Putin warned that the more long-range weapons are sent to Ukraine, the longer Russia will push threats away from its borders. In an important announcement, Putin said Russia was suspending participation in a major arms control agreement with the US.
I have to say that Russia suspends its participation in the New START treaty. Let me repeat, Russia does not abandon the treaty but suspends its participation in it.
The New START treaty was signed in Prague in 2010. It came into force the following year and was extended in 2021 for 5 more years after United States President Joe Biden took office. It caps the number of strategic nuclear warheads that the US and Russia can deploy and deployment of land and submarine-based missiles and bombers to deliver them. Together, Russia and the US hold about 90% of the world's nuclear warheads. Putin also hailed the resistance of the Russian economy in the face of massive sanctions by the West.
As I already mentioned, the West is launching not just a military and informational war against us, but has also opened an economic front. But it is achieving nothing nowhere and will not achieve anything.
He added that the Russian economy has managed to do well despite Western countries' predictions of its collapse. Russian President Vladimir Putin's annual speech coincided US President Joe Biden's unannounced trip to Ukraine and Poland. Biden stepped up his anti-Russia rhetoric during his trip. He pledged more arms for Kyiv and a fresh round of sanctions against Russia during a meeting with his Ukrainian counterpart Volodymyr Zelensky. Biden proclaimed unwavering support for Kyiv and a commitment to bolstering NATO's eastern flank facing Russia. Biden's trip has also drawn criticism from inside America. Conservative Republicans have censured his decision to travel to an active war zone without a significant American military presence. They argue that instead Biden should have visited the border with Mexico or the Ohio town stricken by toxic waste spilled from a derailed train. Kevin Hearn, a House Republican from Oklahoma, who chairs the influential Republican Study Committee, said the president's now spent more time in Kyiv than he has at our southern border. House Republican David Kostoff said there are a lot of people here in the U.S. that would say he probably should have gone to Ohio and visited with the people who have been afflicted by the derailment first. Also, the right-wing American lawmaker Marjorie Taylor Greene said Biden chose Ukraine over America, while forcing the American people to pay for Ukraine's government and war. I cannot express how much Americans hate Joe Biden. The comments from Republicans were in many ways business as usual for the Biden presidency. The GOP has hammered him since practically the start of his administration for the increase in migrant arrivals on the southern border and more recently seized on the East Palestine derailment to argue his administration is turning a blind eye to an environmental disaster. East Palestine's mayor, Trent Conaway, said that Biden's Ukraine trip was the biggest slap in the face. That tells you right now he doesn't care about people. Last month, Biden visited Texas's border with Mexico shortly after he announced new restrictions on migrants who arrive in the United States, which drew opposition from advocacy groups and progressive Democrats. But the comments from the Republican lawmakers could also be harbingers of major political battles to come. Since the beginning of the war, the U.S. has supplied Kyiv with about $30 billion worth of weaponry and other aid, but the country has asked for more. That will require the agreement of both the Biden administration and his Democratic allies controlling the Senate, as well as the Republicans in control of the House of Representatives. A year has passed since the ongoing war in Ukraine broke out. Despite calls for dialogue and a peaceful solution to end the conflict, Western nations, particularly the U.S., have fanned the flames of war by sending billions of dollars in arms to Ukraine, including heavy military equipment. This trend has only escalated the conflict, and prospects for an end to the war look bleak. Also, it seems that Ukraine's allies are gearing up for a much longer war. In his first trip to Ukraine since the beginning of the conflict, U.S. President Joe Biden met with his Ukrainian counterpart Volodymyr Zelensky. During his hours-long surprise visit to Kyiv, Biden said he was there to show his country's unwavering support for Ukraine.
And I'm here to show our unwavering support for the nation's independence, their sovereignty, and territorial integrity. And today, I hope we're going to have a chance to discuss how the United States and our allies, by keeping constant contact with our partners, can most effectively support you and your cause, Mr. President.
And later, at a joint presser with Zelensky, Biden promised increased arms deliveries to Ukraine.
We've committed nearly 700 tanks and thousands of armored vehicles, 1,000 artillery systems, more than 2 million rounds of artillery ammunition, more than 50 advanced launch rocket systems, anti-ship and air defense systems. All defend Ukraine, and that doesn't count the other $500 million we're announcing with you today and tomorrow.
Zelensky hailed the visit as a key sign of support, saying Russia does not stand a chance of winning the war.
This is an unequivocal signal that Russian attempts to win will have no chance. Together, we will protect our cities and our people from the terror of Russia.
While Biden was in Kyiv, the U.S. State Department announced a further $460 million in aid to Ukraine. The assistance includes $450 million in artillery ammunition, anti-armor systems, and air radars, as well as $10 million for energy infrastructure. Biden's visit to Ukraine was the first trip to the country by a U.S. president in 15 years. The visit came 4 days before the first anniversary of the breakout of the war between Ukraine and Russia. Moscow has repeatedly warned the West against providing Kyiv with weapons, saying it would only prolong the conflict. Now, Biden's trip has clearly sent a contradictory message to Moscow. That is, the influx of weapons to Ukraine will continue and that Washington exactly wants the war to go on. Since the beginning of the conflict in Ukraine, Western countries, particularly the U.S., have fanned the flames of war by sending arms to the country rather than supporting dialogue. Now, the U.S. has accused China of planning to send weapons to Russia in its war with Ukraine, warning Beijing that any supplies would cause a serious problem.
We have seen Chinese companies, and of course in China there's really no distinction between private companies and the state. We have seen them provide non-lethal support to Russia for use in Ukraine. The concern that we have now is based on information we have that they're considering providing lethal support, and we've made very clear to them that that would cause a serious problem for us and in our relationship.
Blinken said he had made it clear to his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi during the Munich Security Conference that Beijing would face consequences if it moved ahead with assisting Russia in the war. The warning comes as the U.S. has been the largest provider of weapons to Ukraine during the year-long war with Russia. In reaction to Blinken's comments, China rejected the accusation, saying it's the Americans who are endlessly shipping weapons to the battlefield.
It is the U.S., not China, that is providing a steady stream of weapons on the battlefield. The United States is in no position to make demands of China. We will never accept the U.S. pointing fingers at Sino-Russian relations or even cursing us.
China has expressed deep concern over the Ukraine conflict getting out of control. Beijing has also urged certain countries to stop adding fuel to the fire while pledging to promote dialogue to resolve the conflict. We'll be right back.
is no end in sight to the Israeli atrocities in the region. In a latest development, the regime carried out yet another airstrike near the Syrian capital, Damascus. Several people were killed and over a dozen injured. The attack heavily damaged nearby residential buildings. That after missiles hit the densely populated Kafar Susa neighborhood in central Damascus, where a security complex was located. One soldier was also said to have been killed as a result. The Syrian military said the air defense confronted what it called hostile targets in the sky around Damascus. Rights groups said the latest Israeli strike was the deadliest in the Syrian capital since last month, when another missile attack targeting Damascus International Airport left four people dead. The latest attack, like usual, drew strong condemnation from Damascus. The Syrian Foreign Ministry called this strike a crime against humanity. Iran and Russia separately condemned the attack. Iran's Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani slammed the West's, quote, shameful silence over repeated violations of Syria's sovereignty. Kanani called on the UN Security Council to react to the latest attack by Israel. Russia also called the assault a flagrant violation of international law. Moscow warned of what it called dire consequences for the region. The Israeli assault came days after over 50 people were killed in an ambush carried out by Daesh terror group in Syria's central desert province of Homs. Syrian media said the bodies of all victims taken to a state hospital had gunshot wounds to the head. Recent attacks carried out by the Israeli regime and the Daesh terror group come at a time when Syria is grappling with one of the deadliest earthquakes of all time in the history of the country. So far, nearly 6,000 people have died in Syria's recent earthquake. As the Syrian Foreign Ministry put it, at a time when Syria was trying to heal its wounds, bury its martyrs, and receive condolences, sympathy, and international humanitarian support in facing the devastating earthquake, the Israeli entity launched an air aggression targeting the civilian-populated residential neighborhoods in Damascus. Faisal Mehdad called on the United Nations Secretariat and UN Security Council to condemn the regime's aggression and hold it accountable for its crimes. Syria has been repeatedly complaining to the UN over Israeli repeated assaults, urging the Security Council to take action against Tel Aviv's crimes, but those calls have all fallen on deaf ears. The international community has failed to take a single action in at least condemning such attacks. That comes to the spotlight, especially at a time when the United States maintains its occupation of Syria's eastern oil-rich provinces to steal the country's reserves. There are reports that the Americans load tankers and trucks with oil and wheat and send them over the border to Iraq. The U.S. occupation of oil-rich Syria, the Daesh terror attacks there, and the repeated Israeli missile strikes against the Arab country all take one to the conclusion that Washington and his allies still haven't given up in trying to destroy Syria. Not only one cannot expect any condemnation from Western countries with regards to the matters, there seems to be no international community who would want to do anything. After all, their interests lie in not taking any action. All in all, what seems to be crystal clear is the fact that Syria is still being punished for stopping the plans of those who wanted to create a new Middle East. That makes it even more auspicious when countries which were once hopeful of establishing a new government in Damascus are now normalizing relations with Syria.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear listeners, dear youth, my friends, welcome back to another episode of Youth Station. Well, this is IRIB English Radio. I am Asma, and here with me I have brother Mahdi.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Pleasure to be here.
Of course, always. It's home and it's sweet home.
Well, but it's snowing outside and I'm indoors. That's something that's bugging me constantly. Good, everything's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing's too bad.
The same old dramas in life. Plus, today is snowy.
Yep, something's very positive about today.
Of course, yeah.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So, do you know the story of Narcissus? Well, in mythology, as you go through different stories, there was this story of Eco and Narcissus, which was very beautiful. Now, when we bring Eco into the story, it would turn into a romantic story. But then when we talk about Narcissus himself, it's going to be a psychological story to talk about.
Okay, let's go into the psychology.
Narcissus was a beautiful person. I'm just going to give you the gist. He was a very, very handsome, I suppose to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, to the point that he rejected all the lovers. You know what I mean? Then what happened is that one day he's been cursed. And then one day, by the gods and goddesses. And then one day as he was walking in the woods, getting into the river, he saw the reflection of his face on the river, on the surface of the river. Mm. And then what do you think happened?
Fell in love with himself.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then he fell in love with himself. And then since he's been cursed, he melted in the passion of himself and the passion he held for himself. And then he killed himself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, are you a narcissistic person or not?
Wow. I don't know. I feel a bit nauseous. I feel nauseous right now. Like, I'm going to throw up. Am I or am I not?
I guess every single one of us is in our own way.
In our own way, we care about ourselves, yeah. We pay attention to ourselves, yeah.
We love ourselves.
Yeah, naturally. However, are we at that level where we'd, you know, disregard other people completely just to, you know, serve our own wills or desires, something like that. Yeah, there is where people differ.
Yeah, right?
And
of course.
Are different people. Mm-hmm. However, yeah, I might have definition, right, of something that's wrong, right? And
of being an egoistic person.
Of being an egoist. Yeah, yeah, that too. Oppression. Okay, oppression. Let's keep it to oppression. I might define oppression in a manner and criticize, oppose oppression, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there might be a certain amount of oppressiveness that I have within my character, within myself, that I do display at times. I myself, and I'm inattentive to that percentage or that level of oppressiveness that I have within myself.
Yeah.
But then I oppose oppression, right?
Yes.
That's beyond that percentage or a bit more than that that level of oppression that I have within myself.
Yeah, now right. The story is getting too complicated. Let's okay. go for a break and then please do clarify so the simple. Situation.
All right, let's go.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, speaking of oppression...
Yeah, for example, let's explain through the example that I have in my mind.
Yeah, that's the best way. Thank you yep. for doing that, yeah.
The example is, I'm reading the Quran.
Yes.
And I read the stories of Pharaoh, and he was like, he called himself God. He said, I'm the one who kills, and I'm the one who gives life.
Yeah.
And oh, I've got this power, and I can exercise it the way I want, all that. And I, in my mind, I'm like, oh, what a horrible person, you know?
Yes.
But then I have to realize that what if I had that power, and that absolute, you know, no one's questioning what I'm doing in the world, like in the world as... He knew it.
I think I'm on top of the hierarchy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's an alpha predator. You know, like there's no one after him. At that stage, if I'm at that stage, am I going to be any better, right? Whereas I've got a child. I've got, you know, a child.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I treat my child, because I have that power. Now, child, a young one. Right?
Yes.
Well, if they're grown up or like 20, 25, that's different, right?
Yes.
Because now they've got this certain level of capability to defend themselves, right? Now,
yeah.
Now, that's different. For example, your child is, you know, a toddler, whatever.
Yes.
So the way I treat my children, or like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given a man has given him the right to make certain choices when it comes to the house, right? In the household.
Yeah.
Now, because I have that right, fair enough, I do have that right. Because I have that right, does that right make me oppressive? Right?
A dictator.
A dictator, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what I'm doing? If I'm doing that, right, and I'm abusing the power that I've been given, then I am no different to that Pharaoh.
The
Pharaoh that I am so criticizing.
The
right?
mighty king.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I meant by... the levels that I have in my mind, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I might have a certain percentage of, you know, the oppression that I exercise within my home, right?
Yeah.
But then when I see it, like, in the society, I'm like, oh, this guy's going to go hell.
And I would say that every single one of us have got a sample of that king in ourselves.
Oh, it's not bad, though. It's not that bad.
Yes, as long as you're not taking it to the excessive borders.
Yeah, why is it not bad? Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran quotes a prophet, and he says that the prophet said, Allah has made you muluk, right? Every single person
is a king. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that mean? It means that, well, the person you're talking to is also a king.
Exactly.
You never treat that person as if he's your slave. You can't do that. That's also a king. So there's going to be unrest. There's going to be war.
Of course. But when we are in relationships, we don't look at the issue like that.
Yeah, we don't. Exactly. But when it comes to looking at myself and treating my self-respect and my honor as if I'm the king and I am a king, right?
Yeah.
Whereas treating the person that's before me as if mm-hmm. he's, not a king, whatever you look at it. However you look at it. But if I'm doing that, then of course there's going to be unrest in society. Of course there's going to be a problem between the two individuals. Because, you know, someone has got a complex. He's
of
got
course.
A superiority complex.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is a complex, of course.
Of course it's a complex. So
yeah. And the reason is the amount of respect you give to your own ego. And you don't care about other people's ego or character. Just like the way you said it. If I think I'm a king, I should think that the person who's in front of me is also
a king.
Yeah.
So the relations.
So we should treat each other accordingly.
Yeah, diplomatically, you know. Yeah. You need to have diplomatic relations, an embassy in their heart, and they have an embassy in your heart. Is there a time for a break or do we?
Yes, it's time for a break.
Let's head it.
But I'm just living it for you.
Okay. Well, okay, there's a break. Let's go.
Welcome back. This is still Youth Station. We're talking about the egos and how much Hitler I have in myself.
Before we had to break, I remember this this ideology that certain people within the Shia have.
Mm-hmm.
It's an opinion or it's a school of thought. You know, like even within Shias, there are different philosophical and, you know, different schools of thought.
Yeah.
One of them, they talk about further than just the metaphysics, right? That's where they talk about Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he was talking to the soldiers of Yazid.
Yeah.
On the day of Ashura. And in Karbala. So he talks about them. He's like he explains to them. He's trying to make them understand the crucial point that these people are standing in their lives. So
yeah.
This is a crucial point, right? That he's trying to explain to them and trying to make them understand, but they do
they
not
were standing on an abyss.
Yeah, yeah. And he was trying to show them that it's where they are right now. But it was as if it were, you know, they couldn't hear or they couldn't see or whatever. Like they were just, I mean, as if they were
ignorant they heard.
Yeah, like statues. They were just there, right?
Yeah.
And then he explains, he says, well, because your stomachs is filled with haram, right?
Forbidden food.
Forbidden food.
Mm.
The word the Imam uses, the word is butun, right? And the thing is, in Arabic, the jam' like the plural for batn, which is a stomach, is butun. And the plural for batin is also butun, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, Imam is
that is the soul.
Yeah, which refers to the soul. Batin is the esoteric perspective, right?
Yeah.
So Imam, some people like the ulama, the people of knowledge, they're saying that Imam al-Islam is trying to explain to them that before you were here, before you physically arrived, and to do what? To martyr, to kill an imam, that takes a lot of wrong courage, right?
Yeah.
You have to be very bold to be able to stand in front of him with the intention of killing him. So Imam alayhi salatu wasalam says that your souls had done this before your bodies arrived here to
exactly.
do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because your soul is going to tell you a lot of times that, look, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Don't do this.
And we have it in the Holy Book of Quran. God
Precisely.
Has given us.
Precisely.
God has given us the good and the right and the bad.
Precisely.
And we know it instinctively.
Exactly. Right? So there's an imam within you.
Yeah.
Right? So so within you there was an imam. And within you there was an oppressor.
First you killed that.
That imam within yourself.
Yeah.
The oppressor that you had within your soul. He had the power. He overpowered your positiveness, and that oppressor within your soul had killed the imam.
Exactly.
For you to have the courage,
that was the overwinning imam in you. That killed the light.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the oppressor in your soul.
Yeah.
He killed the imam, which is why you're here now,
exactly.
physically, to kill an imam.
So that's the whole story with the life itself.
Yeah,
you can apply that everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah, precisely.
Yeah. So we have been given the good and the bad and what is the way to achieve the truth and how to find it and how to act according to it. But then if we give too much of value to that ego that exists inside of us, and then you gave it different names right now, if we give it too much of respect, if we listen to whatever single thing that it's going to tell us, then life is going to turn into a horrible disaster.
Oh, well, yeah, your afterlife is going to be in trouble as well.
Of course, yeah. The future, which is going to be eternal, is going to be a miserable eternity.
Mm.